believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everyone. I wanted to start off by addressing something that I get when it comes to some of the emails that I get. People, I talk about on the radio about training, getting trained, get properly trained, get everything trained properly, go out and find the right kind of trainer. And then I get these emails refuting that. I want you guys to understand something. I have trained literally thousands of people from handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, long-range precision rifle, from defensive into hunting-related things. I know what I'm talking about. You'll hear the same sentiments echoed by Dave Champion on the Dave Champion Show right here on RBN. You've got to find the right kind of training. If you expect to get jumped and beat up, would you want to go take some self-defense classes, say some martial arts classes, something like that? The answer is yes. What is your natural ability just to fight having never been trained? Just with your fists, usually not very good. You got to hone those skills. A gun is not a point-and-click interface. It doesn't just work like that. You've got to get trained on how to do it properly. That's it. That's just the way it is. Same thing if you were going to be attacked by somebody with a samurai sword or a jousting sword. You might want to have a little bit of training. Would you agree? So to kind of, I guess, battle with me on whether or not you really need to have good training other than just setting up the soda cans or the beer bottles or the bullseye target, it's kind of a futile argument. And quite honestly, I try to answer every email that I can. And when it comes to those, I really try to answer those because you're taking your own life into your hands when you say, yeah, you know what, I don't really think I need to do that. I don't think the gun, the caliber, the training, what it is really as important as just having the gun. Okay, just having the gun is a start. All right? It's a start. Now, out at Front Sight, they have a motto that says, any gun will do with you if you will do. And I really disagree with that. Not any gun will do. If you want to have a defensive gun, then you can use it for defensive purposes. If all you've got is a broom handle, a World War II Mauser broom handle, well, that's really not an appropriate gun. Will it do? If absolutely nothing else will do, but you put it up against something like a Springfield XD or a Glock or a 1911 in the hands of someone who's trained, training for training, gun for gun, guess what? The more modern defensive gun wins. Any gun will do if you will do? Not exactly. Now, there are some certain exceptions to that. It's a nice little phrase. It's a nice little motto. It's a nice way to get people in the door. I don't entirely buy that. So you've got to get some training done. You want to go on YouTube and look up some videos and see what you're in for? Fine. But don't just use that as your training because you don't have somebody who's able to stand there and look and see what's going on and observe you while you're training to see where you can get better. You've got to have an independent trained set of eyes. All right? That's it for segment one. We've got more coming up after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, Don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, a fellow named John Schneider wrote a piece called Gun Law Expert Commends Congressman for Sponsoring Mariner Self-Defense Bill. Freedom-loving Americans congratulate two congressmen for sponsoring a bill this week to ensure the traditional right of self-defense of United States mariners against acts of piracy, says gun rights activist John Schneider. Now, that is really kind of a response to the piracy that's going on off the Somalia coast. Pardon me, I'm actually in the process of having to send a message to my board operator here. This contracts sharply and favorably with the Senate Judiciary Committee vote earlier in the week to recommend Senate confirmation on the Supreme Court of a nominee who doesn't even know if there's a right to self-defense, he added. Hopefully the full Senate will refuse to accept this committee's absurd position. So that's all good news. We're still talking about about the rights of people to keep and bear arms and not having someone who interprets a constitutional in a personal view. Now remember, Sotomayor is still the same one that said a wise Latina woman can make a much more well-informed decision than a white man. Okay, so this is all kind of coming together now when we see these bills getting put together. There's more quotes from her later on in this. Representative Frank Lobedino out of New Jersey and Aliyah Cummings out of Maryland introduced H.R. 3376, the proposed United States Mariner and Vessel Protection Act of 2009. It was referred to the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. The introduction of the measure comes in response to reports of piratal attacks on the high seas of American sailors, said Snyder. Our nation was thrilled on Easter Sunday in April when United States Navy SEAL sharpshooters rescued Captain Richard Phillips of the Masaryk, Alabama, from pirates off the coast of Africa. The action demonstrated that guns in the hands of good people can be and are used to save lives and to thwart the intentions of wicked people using guns for nefarious purposes. Well, absolutely. You couldn't be any better about that. And you actually did it from New Jersey. You've got Lobedino, your kind of co-sponsor on this, who is in New Jersey. You can only buy one handgun a month. But yet the comments supporting this bill come out in the contradiction of what's going on in your own home state. So you can see really this stupidity that goes on. Although I'm happy about the bill, again, one of the co-sponsors, Lobedino from New Jersey, is a state where now you can only buy one handgun a month, but the action demonstrates that guns in the hands of good people can be and are used to save lives, to thwart the intentions of wicked people using guns for nefarious purposes, which is why we should all be armed. Not just on the high seas. H.R. 3376 would provide that an owner, operator, time charter, master, or mariner who uses force or authorizes the use of force to defend the vessel of the United States against an act of piracy shall not be liable for any injury or death caused by such force to any person participating in the act of piracy. So it doesn't give you a carte blanche if some innocent person messes up, or you mess up and an innocent person gets in. But if, say, there's a little boat of thugs coming and firing on your vessel, and you open up with your deck-mounted fully automatic 50 caliber BMG and blow that thing out of the water, and someone survives it, that doesn't mean that they can sue you, because you're exempt. H.R. 3376 sounds to me like exactly what we need. H.R. 3376 is the type of bill that you had Representative Ron Paul talking about after the Easter Sunday attack and saving by the Navy SEALs. A former NRA editor, Schneider is a public affairs director of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. He's also treasurer of the Second Amendment Foundation and public affairs director of the National Association of Chiefs of Police. Shotgun News recently named him the senior rights activist in Washington for gun rights.
The Senate should reject the nomination of Judge Sotomayor to the Supreme Court because she maintains she doesn't know if people have an individual right to self-defense, which is a big load of caca. Despite the Senate Judiciary Committee's vote earlier this week to recommend confirmation, the full Senate still has time to turn its back on the committee in this matter, he continues. While such an action would be most unusual, the judges voiced ambivalence on such a fundamental matter warrants it. Snyder noted that Sotomayor said, I don't know if an individual of the citizen of the United States has a right to self-defense. She said this during confirmation hearings conducted earlier this month by the Senate Judiciary Committee. She said this in response to questioning by Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. Now, I actually watched when Senator Coburn was questioning Sotomayor. And every single thing that he asked her that she had personal beliefs in that were aligned with the senators, she answered the question. She answered it quite eloquently. When he would ask her about something that she has views in the polar opposite of Coburn or mainstream America, she wishy-washed it around it. She would not give a straight answer. Senator Coburn, who's a medical doctor, asked Sotomayor, do you have a personal opinion, or can you give me your opinion of whether or not I personally, as an individual citizen, have a right to self-defense? Sotomayor's response was, I don't know. Snyder, he said, this exchange indicates Sotomayor does not know whether an individual has the right to defend himself or herself, or even has a right to his or her own life. Doesn't she realize that an individual has a right to protect his or her life from a murderous criminal who would deprive him or her of it? The right of self-protection is basic to our nation, to our culture, indeed to civilization itself. To not know if this right exists is an absolute disqualifier, and he's talking about for someone to sit on the bench. The fact that an individual of such an ambivalence on such a fundamental matter is nominated to the highest court in the land indicates the low esteem to which the president holds individual rights. That the Senate, especially Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada, is even considering the nomination can lead one to question the legitimacy of government itself. What is the purpose of government if not the protection of the rights of the individuals, including the basic right of self-defense? Well, I got to say bravo on that, Mr. Snyder. If you have a government that is not willing to allow you to protect yourself from criminals, they certainly do not want you to be able to protect yourself from them. And where does it start? Does gun control start with just wide sweeping taking away of your guns? No. It starts with a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there. Eroding away rights of different types of guns, different classifications of guns, different types of actions, what they look like, the so-called quote-unquote black guns, these matte black finish semi-automatic rifles that are magazine-fed. You know, it's the same thing with your rights. If they don't want you to be able to protect yourself from the government, they erode your rights away for things such as self-protection, unreasonable search and seizure, things such as that. They erode them little by little by little, which has been going on for decades. And if you've not been paying attention, slap yourself. Have someone else slap you so you can wake up and realize this. Most of the people listening to the sound of my voice are in tune with this because RBN listeners aren't just haphazard, generally tune in, see what happens to be going on, blaseic talk radio listeners. They want to hear, really, the truth. They want to hear, really, what they need to hear. That is why John Stadtmiller started RBN. That is why RBN is on the air. That's why I'm here talking to you right now. Right? When we leave our future in the hands of our politicians and entrust them to represent us properly and not represent the major donors, that's really the key. To put aside the representation of their major donors and represent us, we're fooling ourselves. All right? We are fooling ourselves. Pelosi came out this weekend and was talking about how the insurance companies can't be trusted, and they try to screw out of paying people their money back or paying their claims, and it's just not, it's just, insurance companies are evil. They're wicked. Well, if you look at the top five donors to Nancy Pelosi, the top five, the top five individual donors and the top five industries, two of the top five in both categories are insurance companies of one kind or another. Health insurance and just standard insurance. And so she's basically saying, those people who give me money, they are evil. They are the devil. You know something? Maybe you should check your balance sheet. Hopefully, that ticked enough of them off that they won't give you money next time. And I actually believe that it's been reputed that Pelosi is the wealthiest woman, possibly the wealthiest person, in all of Congress, all those 535 knuckleheads. So she probably doesn't need a bunch of donors. But hopefully she ticked enough of them off that she loses not just the donors, but the support of those donors. Hopefully she'll tick off some unions, because those unions are generally a very strong voting bloc. Maybe they have a piece of the action in some of these insurance companies on the side, and she loses those votes too. What an absolutely hellacious individual to have as the Speaker of the House. Okay, there's a few political updates for you. I like the idea of the anti-piracy guys on the boats carrying guns bill. That's a good idea. We got more coming to you a little bit on Eric Holder, scumbag attorney general, when we return from the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Okay, it's no secret that CBS is a pretty socialistic bunch. And when they report and they do things, it's very, very left. It's very pro-democratic, very pro-socialist. So here's a little bit of kind of an interview, kind of a, I don't know if it's really an interview. The dude spent a day with Eric Holder. So listen to some of this rubbish that comes out of this, a day in the life of Eric Holder.
Attorney General.
How you doing?
Just before 8 a.m., the Attorney General is greeted by his armed FBI security detail. The pressure cooker starts early. As he heads to the Capitol, Eric Holder is well aware of the daily threat matrix, laying out all the ways terrorists are planning to kill us.
So that's a hell of a way to start your day every day.
Yeah, you're typically not finding good news in those reports or in that meeting. It is, in some ways, the most sobering part of the day.
Overnight, the FBI and Homeland Security has sent out a bulletin warning authorities about Americans training with terrorists overseas and returning home. Holder says it's a new emerging threat.
I mean, that's one of the things that's particularly troubling. I mean, this whole notion of the radicalization of Americans leaving this country, going to different parts of the world, and then coming back. This whole notion of radicalization is something that perhaps did not loom as large a few months ago as it does now. And that's, it's the shifting nature of threats that I think keeps you up at night.
Vice President Cheney has made some comments, you know, over in recent months that he doesn't think the Obama administration is taking the threat as seriously as this administration.
We understand that keeping the American people safe is the most important job that we have. It's the most important thing the president does. It's the most important thing that I do. So, I mean, this notion that we have somehow dropped the ball or that we're not as focused on this, it's simply not accurate. It's inconsistent with what I do on a daily basis.
Terrorism, espionage, corruption, the pressure of hardball politics, all on the plate for the nation's top cop. As a result, working with allies and foes on Capitol Hill, a job requirement.
My job is probably the toughest job there is because it is the one part of the cabinet where certainly you have to reflect the president, but you've got to be independent.
Do you anticipate there will be moments in his tenure where he's going to have to say no to the president or do something?
If there aren't moments, then it would be very unusual.
This summer, Holder faces a series of critical decisions. Whether to investigate the Bush administration detention and interrogation of terrorism suspects. Holder made clear that's a real possibility, regardless of the fallout.
I have said that waterboarding is torture. If one looks at the history of that practice, I don't see how you can reach any other conclusion.
Okay, I'm going to break in there. This interview is about halfway done, but I'm going to break in real quick because we have got... We've got one administration looking to go after the previous administration. And that seems to be a fairly common thread when Democrats get in after there had been Republicans. And I'm not a fan of this because if Bush Jr., Bush II, wanted to go after the Clinton administration, he had nothing but loaded guns filled with the ammunition in which the Clinton administration provided. Look at Janet Reno. And all of the illegal things that went on during her tenure. Look at Madeleine Albright and all the illegal things that happened under her cabinet position during the tenure of her as the Secretary of State. All the things in Bosnia and Somalia. Under Janet Reno, we had Waco, Texas. We had Ruby Ridge. But did the Bush administration go after the Clinton administration? We need to do one thing or another. We need to have every new administration carefully scrutinize and prosecute the previous one for anything illegal that may have happened. Or we need to not do it. It's one or the other. But we shouldn't have always the Democrats looking to go after the Republicans who preceded them. That sucks. It's trying to make any kind of an arrangement or a deal or a gentleman's agreement with a liberal or a socialist is only to serve them at that moment, and they forget about it later. If you ever see the Republicans reach across the aisle, say in the Senate, and say, look, all right, here's the deal. David Sauter's leaving, and he wasn't a very good Supreme Court justice in our eyes. He certainly was in yours. You want to replace him with somebody who's like-minded. We're going to reach across the aisle and say, okay, we'll go ahead and we'll confirm Sotomayor, which hasn't been done, thank God. But we'll confirm her. If, down the road, you know, next time we've got a Republican in office and they want to put someone conservative on the bench, you remember it and you reach across the aisle to us. You know what the Democrats, oh yeah, sure, yeah, we'll do that. And then in, you know, 12 years when it does happen, 9 years when it does happen, whatever it is, and they remind the Democrats of this, well, you know what, all they do is they remind them, you made a deal with the devil. Okay, you made a deal with the devil. You sold off a part of your soul. I'm not going to reciprocate. Welcome to hell with me. Because we're going to make it tough. As a matter of fact, we might even go so far as to filibuster your nomination like we did with Robert Bork. All right, we'll play a little bit more of this interview a little bit later. Just stick with me through the break. And we've got a couple of things coming up with the riot of the day. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
If you really would like to start a war with somebody, what you've got to do is try to take away, if at all possible, before you actually engage on them, a great historical strategy is to divide them, get some internal bickering, and then when they're distracted with their own internal struggles, you do whatever you want. That is happening with a brand new strategy, out of your Obama regime. It's being headed by Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. She told the Council on Foreign Relations that for too long we've treated the public as a liability to be protected rather than an asset in our nation's collective security. This approach, unfortunately, has allowed confusion, anxiety, and fear to linger. What they're trying to do is enlist citizens in the anti-terrorism strategy. What that means is spying on your neighbor, spying on people you have contact with online, spying on people you work with, and bickering and sending it back to the federal government so that we are the little web that weaves all of us citizens who get completely screwed by the regime in office, by the non-representing representatives that we elect. We're now going to start to implode on the inside. This is their idea. Listen to this, which is this is this part of the speech from Janet Napolitano to the Council on Foreign Relations. Listen to this.
So how do we secure our homeland and stay true to our values?
Okay, that what sounds like a man's voice is actually Janet Napolitano. Don't get thrown.
We do it with four levels of collective response. It starts with the American people. From there, it extends to local law enforcement. And from there, up to the federal government, and then finally out beyond our shores, where America's international allies can serve and do serve as partners in a collective fight against terrorism. In the last 4 weeks alone, I have traveled nearly 30,000 miles from Islamabad to Seattle, engaging partners in all of these levels. We have brokered international agreements, launched new partnerships, and challenged our citizens to play their part in our collective security. We face a common threat. It requires a collective response. And we must face that threat and coordinate that response in an evolving and highly networked world. So the networked world takes on many forms. The cyber network that runs our power grids, fires our critical infrastructure, and facilitates commerce is now a target and is itself vulnerable to attack. This network climate forces us to rethink how best to protect our values and our security in a world where the tools for creating violence and chaos are as easy to find as the tools for buying music online or restocking an inventory. We also live in a mobile world with complex networks of people and information. We cannot forget that the 9/11 attackers conceived of their plans in the Philippines, planned in Malaysia and Germany, recruited from Yemen and Saudi Arabia, trained in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and carried them out in the United States. So that's why our Homeland Security network must be built to leverage force multipliers. We need new thinking. When we add a prominent former computer hacker to our Homeland Security Advisory Council, as I just did, it helps us understand our own weaknesses that could be exploited by our adversaries. And the threats we face are, by their very nature, asymmetrical. Terrorism more often has become privatized violence. It does not rely on links to an army or to a sovereign state. We often hear that this is what our globalized era looks like. But what is most salient about today's environment is that it is also networked. And in a networked world, information, true and false, moves everywhere all the time. And in that network world, everyone who is part of the network, meaning all of us, can enjoy the tremendous benefits, but also must be ready and willing to learn about and help address the vulnerabilities that come with these benefits. So the team we put on the field needs to be bigger, better networked, and better trained. Our physical United States border should be our last line of defense, not our first. So together with the Department of Justice, we have now forged agreements to prevent and combat serious crime with 13 international partners. There's more to do on this front. Now, I want to give you a window into how important these partnerships are, let me show you one example of our new approach and new thinking. Our growing relationship with Mexico is, of course, part of a broader effort, and it is designed to interdict not only the smuggling of narcotics, weapons, bulk cash, and people at the United States-Mexico border, but also designed to recognize our strong national, our homeland interests in the United States and Mexico and its relationship, and the whole national interest we have in making sure that Mexico and the crime there and the large cartels there are broken up. This direct, interactive approach with our international partners is a new approach, which we think is critical to dealing with things like cartel violence, and also helps us ensure that that violence does not spill across our border or weaken Mexico's ability to be a strong partner with the United States. So we're going well beyond what we've done in the past.
Terrorism can emanate from all kinds of places around the world, and that intelligence is very important. The number of possible threats is infinite, so how do you zero in on the most important ones? And yet the resistance of people, let's say, at the CIA to share with the FBI and vice versa is legendary. How are you doing getting them to share with you when they have a tough time sharing with each other?
Let's talk about that, because there has been a legacy of non-sharing in some respects, which is a luxury we can no longer afford. And that is why we have a director of national intelligence. In fact, our group, which the principals, which means the head of the FBI, the head of CIA, myself, Admiral Blair, we will be meeting tomorrow. We regularly have luncheons, just ourselves, no staff, to make sure that we are effectively communicating the sharing of information. I think the fact that I, as Secretary of Homeland Security, receive a daily intel brief, not just from members of the Department of Homeland Security, but also, for example, from a CIA briefer, helps ensure that critical intelligence is being shared. And in this administration, we're very intent on exercising how we handle intel and how we respond. Indeed, right now, there's a national-level exercise underway that will test some of this sharing capacity, whether things are being shared and whether responses are being correctly calibrated. So personal interaction, de facto interaction on a daily basis, and then exercising, I think, are the three major techniques to improve that intelligence sharing environment.
Okay, so what you've got now is a plan by the Obama regime, headed through Janet Napolitano, Department of Homeland Security, the right-wing extremist reporting woman, to they've now come up with a way to divide us and also to watch us. You've got to realize this speech is the catalyst to several things, to watching us. And they'll probably start with the transportation hubs, right? The mass transit in the bigger cities. More cameras, more people, incentives to call up if you see something goofy against each other. Reason to add individuals to the terrorist watch list. Therefore, if Eric Holder gets his way and a bill passes, that means that you can't buy guns. You see how this is starting to wrap together? More cameras on the streets. Such as, I don't know if there's any place on the streets of London that you can do anything without being on at least one camera. They've got hundreds of thousands of cameras recording everything. You want to talk about Big Brother? I think Little Brother needs to step up and take a position on this. So they're trying to use the American public to spy on each other. I've got to tell you, there was a lot of information already given to the FBI months before 9/11. The FBI, there was a couple of FBI agents that were on the trail of these 9/11 hijackers. And what happened to it? The government pushed it under the carpet. Nothing needs to be stepped up. They need to start listening more. The information was already provided. They did nothing with it. Now they want to do something with it. And now they're trying to say, well, we need the public's help. The public helped you before. The public's been helping you. Now you're literally advertising to have people go out and spy on their neighbors, spy on their coworkers, spy on the people they have contact with online. How about this? How about spying on your radio host? Am I going to have a bunch of people watching me in and out of the studio? Am I going to have a bunch of people trying to find my home and where I live? Because I sit here and I ridicule, I critique the Obama regime and the garbage administrators that they brought in. Janet Napolitano is one of them. Eric Holder's another. The chief administrator, Obama, is of course yet a third. Where is this going to end? I'll tell you, it's the beginning. It's a catalyst for more spying on you. You know the Patriot Act? That's going to be child's play. Look out. Because your neighbor's going to be watching you. You're not going to be able to trust anyone if they really get this off the ground. We need to recognize this for what it is. How often can we actually trust the government? How often can we actually trust what comes out of the federal government? The answer that I have come up with since I've been on planet Earth is never. You never can. There's always something behind it. It's never as simple as it looks. It's never as positive as it should be on the surface. Never. Never. There's always something diabolical behind it. And guys, this is not a conspiracy theory that I'm spewing here. This is just simply history. This is factual, substantial, quantitative, historical fact. You cannot trust anything that the federal government wants to do. There's always something more behind it. And this is not as simple as, you know, if there's some sort of little terror cell or some problem nationally, domestically, that we're unaware of because it is domestic and you happen to be a neighbor or a coworker and you smell something funny, call us. You should be looking for these kinds of things. That's not it. If somebody sees this kind of thing, they're going to be heads up enough to report it. Because it's not just going to be any one person. If these people got to go plan somewhere or got to go buy stuff somewhere or sit and meet somewhere, others are going to notice. And I have a small story to tell you. A very good friend of mine that I have known for 25 years, I guess now, 24 years, owns a restaurant in Las Vegas. 2 months before 9/11, in July, when the 9/11 terrorists, it was confirmed that they had spent a few days in Las Vegas, they ate, the 20 of them, ate at my buddy's restaurant. And he remembered them vividly because they were all like Muhammad Atta. My buddy said that he had the eyes of an absolute fearless, homicidal, just maniac, an absolute zealot, totally dedicated to whatever was behind his beady little eyes. And they left these guys to be. They stayed for hours. They ate two full meals, grazed in between, and paid the several hundred dollar bill in cash. And this was something that these guys, the people at the restaurant, talked about for the next couple months. What a weird group. What a weird group. They happened to let somebody know about it. Where that information went, as Janet Napolitano says, we don't know. And then when they started showing the faces a week or two after 9/11, when they realized who the people involved were, they called back up and said, those are the guys we called and warned you about. Those are the guys. What did you do with that information? Nothing. So, Janet, we're on to you. We're on to the whole Obama regime. We're on to your subversive stuff. You guys are going to have to pull something new. You're going to have to create something new. Don't pull some old hat trick out of the back of the file cabinet. I mean, how do we divide and overcome the American public over the next few years? Okay, well, that's a plan. But many of us are smarter than that. Many of us, quite honestly, Jen, are smarter than you and the rest of the people in the regime. We just don't have the money backing us. But we are, in fact, smarter. And we are students of history. We are students of how the government has screwed over their people, not just in this country, but others throughout history. So this is a $78 million budgeted piece of let's divide and conquer the American public. And this is a way to take away some of their liberties, to try and offer them some security, which, as you know, he who would give up liberty for security deserves neither liberty nor security. Okay, you're going to try to institute that with the stupid people that put you people in office, and it's not going to work. It's not. At least as far as I'm concerned, it's not going to work. I'm going to sit here and profess it every day if I have to try and stop you guys and try and educate the public as to what you're really up to. Because what you want is for us to not be united. What you want is for us to not be armed. And what you want from us is to be subservient to those of you within our government. You seem to forget, Janet, and the rest of the regimes, that you work for us. That's the way it's supposed to be. You work for us. I know you sit back there, sure we do. Not in this lifetime. You know what? It's coming. The Tea Party's coming. You've seen a couple of them already. There's more coming, and we're looking to get you on the same sheet of music. More after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled a couple months ago that the Second Amendment is an individual's rights. Now that covers, let's see, Washington, Oregon, California, Idaho, Nevada, Hawaii, and Alaska, I believe is the jurisdiction of the Ninth Circuit Court. The only court above that Supreme Court. Now, the Second Circuit Court back in New York, the Seventh Circuit back in Illinois, have both ruled, now it's not an individual's rights, it's for the, federal areas. Well, the Ninth Circuit ruled differently. Now, the way it works is they rule in groups. Usually, there's nine judges on the entire circuit, and they work together in groups of three on different rulings. So, the group of embank Ninth Circuit want to get together to rehear this case. That means all nine judges get together on somewhat of a rare occasion. Now, neither side that brought this case to the Ninth Circuit asked for an en banc ruling. Neither one, neither the plaintiff nor the defendant, wanted the Knights applied for this. However, there are so many anti-gun judges on the Ninth Circuit, they have voted on their own to have an en banc hearing and revisit this decision. All right? So, here's a little bit of information. University of Pittsburgh law professor Arthur Hellman told reporters that the gun control supporters on the San Francisco-based appeals court may have voted for rehearing to eliminate a circuit split and provide a reason for the U.S. Supreme Court to accept the case. Because right now the Supreme Court has a reason to accept this case or the other cases, such as the NRA case challenging the Chicago gun ban, because there's different rulings around the country by different circuit courts. A Ninth Circuit panel had ruled in April that the individual right to gun ownership found in the Supreme Court's decision in D.C. versus Heller applied to state and local governments. Heller had involved a Washington, D.C. resident and did not decide the incorporation issue. The Ninth Circuit ruling, which is Nordyke versus King, was in conflict with two other federal appeals court rulings, including one written by Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor and the New York Times, a report of the New York Times. So here we are. We have got three different circuit courts, one ruling one way, two ruling the other. And the one that ruled in favor of us pro-gun people, us pro-rights people, is the one that we would expect to vote against it. The three-judge panel did. The Embank grouping has decided amongst themselves to rehear this, which means they may overturn themselves. Now, I gotta ask you, what kind of hogwash is that? That, my friends, is why we cannot blindly trust anyone within any branch of the federal government. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. We'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.